You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day. Tobia here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, worker stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Naarm, Melbourne for 3CR
and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, we recognise that our struggles are connected and stand in staunch solidarity with elders past, present and emerging. On today's program, we will be hearing union voices from around the globe as the genocide in Palestine reaches its most acute levels and its impacts are revealed in all areas of life for all working people, both in Palestine and indeed around the world. We will hear a couple of speeches from the recent Trade Union Congress that was held in the UK that took place from the 7th to the 10th of September this year, as well as presenting to all of you listening on the airwaves and online the translated statement of the General Secretary of the Unione Sindacale di Base, that's the USB's, Guido Lutrario, at the public assembly that preceded this week's incredible scenes in Italy in what will surely go down in history as one of the staunchest displays of rank-and-file union organising, working hand-in-hand with workers across all union organisations, as well as student movements and grassroots political organisation. But first, some union news. Our first item comes from the desk of the OHS Rep Safety Net Journal. The World Health Organization has released its Climate Change and Workplace Heat Stress Technical Report and Guidance, with the last WHO guidance being published in 1969. This report is long overdue in addressing the concerns of workers that carry out their activities in today's climate. The World Meteorological Organization has reported that 2024 was the warmest year on record, with the global temperature averaging 1.45 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. The past 10 years have been the warmest on record, underscoring the continuing long-term trend of rising global temperatures due to climate change. In addressing those rising temperatures, the WHO report provides evidence on the challenges and risks associated with workplace heat stress in the context of climate change. It looks at the physiological, socioeconomic, and mental health impacts of workplace heat stress and offers evidence-based guidance for prevention and mitigation. It highlights the health and productivity risks faced by billions of workers across the world, especially in manual labour sectors who often work long hours and are exposed to the elements. Here in Australia, we are increasingly seeing the impacts of excessive heat in the workplace, especially on construction sites. The growing trend of the use of surveillance technology in monitoring workers and productivity is continuing its troubling trajectory, with story after story emerging from all sectors about how company-controlled apps can gain access to your personal device location. And in the case of a recent investigation carried out by The Guardian's Josh Taylor, who interviewed University of Melbourne law professor Alicia Blackham on her upcoming paper that will be published in the Australian Journal of Labour Law. In her research, Alicia Blackham uncovered some rather alarming exemptions in the Australia Federal Privacy Act that allow for the collection of employee data, and in her words, as reported on the Guardian article, quoting, "What the case law has illustrated is that while employers may have to disclose certain things before they collect employee data, when data is collected, all the protections disappear due to that exception. So it means employees' data, when it's hacked, doesn't necessarily have any recourse or protection. It could be sent to other companies, offshored, sold, and there's no real protection provided by federal privacy law." Alarming, to say the least. Let's go now to the yearly Trade Union Congress that was held in Brighton a fortnight ago and hosted unions from all around the United Kingdom. We will hear first from Daniel Kibede, the General Secretary of the National Education Union, and then a speech from later in the same day from Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions General Secretary Shaher Saeed, as both speakers address the need for a recognition of the shared humanity of all workers and, indeed, people, and of the very real need of an international response, and as we will hear from later in the case of Italy's general strike that was held on Monday the 22nd of September, a union-led response.
Congress, we gather here today in a moment of unspeakable urgency. For the children of the world, they are ours. They're not theirs, not yours, not mine, they are ours. And what we do or fail to do in the face of their suffering testifies to who we are and what we dare to become. And I tell you this, there is no refuge in silence. There is no sanctuary in neutrality. For when the children of Gaza cry and we turn away, we have already chosen the side of the destroyer. The children of the world are ours. And if we believe that, if we truly believe that, then the child of Gaza is as much our responsibility as the child of Glasgow, the child of Bolton. Their dreams bound up with our dreams. Their safety bound up with our safety. Last year, Hussam Zomlot, the Palestinian ambassador, stood before us. He thanked us for our solidarity and he said something that we must not forget. He said that our solidarity gave the Palestinian people the greatest gift, the gift of hope. But let us be clear, hope now is not enough. We cannot be content to offer the Palestinian people hope whilst their children are buried beneath the rubble. We cannot be satisfied to say that we stand with them whilst they are hunted in their own land. Our task is fiercer, our responsibility heavier. This motion seeks to give the Palestinian people more than hope. Its aim is to directly try and disrupt the barbarism, the nightmare that has been unleashed upon the Gazan people. For nearly 2 years, Gaza has been pounded day after day, night after night. Hospitals flattened, homes obliterated, schools turned into graveyards. 18,000 children gone, 1,400 doctors and nurses gone, 650 teachers gone, 287 journalists gone, lives extinguished, dreams erased, futures stolen. Not by earthquake, not by flood, not by some act of God, but killed by a British ally, Israel. And we hear reports from British doctors, men and women who have placed their lives in danger to serve Gaza. And what do they tell us? They tell us of wounded children carried into hospitals day after day. One day, every wound in the head. The next day, every wound in the stomach. The next day, every wound in the genitals. This is not the chaos of war. This is not the accident of battle. This is deliberate. The deliberate targeting of children. Those children are ours. Their blood no less red, their breath no less precious, their laughter, had we the grace to hear it, no less sacred than our children that we kiss goodnight to at bedtime. And the truth is, the Palestinian teacher is no less important than the ones who shaped us. The Palestinian doctor or nurse no less important than the ones who care for us. The Palestinian journalist, no less important than the ones who inform us. The Palestinian people, no less important, no less sacred, no less human. And if we dare to believe otherwise, we have already surrendered the very thing that makes us human. And for those who have survived the bullets, for those who have survived the bombs, what for them? They are being starved. Starved deliberately, starved as a weapon of war. Starving children, orphaned children, children used as target practice, children torn apart by bombs. Do not insult us by calling this a humanitarian crisis. Do not dignify this by calling it a war. Let us tell the truth. This is genocide. And it is not a hidden genocide. It is not a secret genocide. No. This is genocide in plain sight. Genocide in full view of the world. Genocide live streamed minute by minute, second by second, whilst the powerful enable, whilst the comfortable look away, and whilst the governments of the world, including our own, twist their tongues into silence, we cannot say that we did not see, that we did not know. The images are before us, the cries within our ears. And so the only question that remains is, what did we do? Now, Congress, I'd like to take this opportunity to speak directly to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, history is merciless. It will not forgive our evasions. It will not forgive our cowardice. It will not forgive our lives. It records without sentiment where we stood when the blood of innocents cried out from the earth. And that question that we asked ourselves will also be asked of you. What did our government do? Did it expel Israeli diplomats? No. Did it impose sanctions on Israel? No. Did it stop arms sales to Israel? No. It did the opposite. More arms given in 3 months than the Tories gave in 4 years. RAF planes in the skies, flying daily missions, providing surveillance, providing intelligence, feeding the machinery of death. Britain is complicit. Complicit in the bombing of homes, complicit in the slaughter of children, complicit in genocide.
You're on Stick Together, workers' stories, union news and social justice issues.
Honourable General Secretary Paul Nowak, dear brothers and sisters of the TUC conference, distinguished guests. It's a privilege to stand before you today, coming from Palestine, carrying the pain and hopes of our people in my heart, and speaking for our children, women, youth, elderly, and workers who faced daily struggles under the burden of occupation, genocide, and starvation. I offer you today heartfelt thanks for your unwavering support for our just cause, the cause of Palestine, which is not just our fight, but the fight of all who value freedom worldwide. Your impact, dear brother General Secretary Paul, is undeniable. I come to you from Palestine, where our people in the Gaza Strip endure relentless bloodshed, ethnic cleansing, genocide, and starvation under a brutal occupation. The toll of those killed in the Gaza Strip in the last 700 days is staggering. According to the Palestinian Central Bureau of Statistics, 64,944 victims killed in Gaza. These include 18,592 children, 12,400 women, 4,412 elderly, and 360 people, including 114 children, who died due to starvation and lack of basic necessities, plus an additional 1,029 people killed in the West Bank, including 210 children. In Gaza, among those killed, 1,411 medical personnel, 245 journalists, 800 educators, 113 civil defense workers, 204 UNRWA staff, plus the deliberate targeting and killing of journalists. There are also 11,200 people missing. These include 4,700 children and women. Out of a workforce of 1,350,000 in Gaza and the West Bank, 507,000 workers are unemployed. Major corporations working with the Israeli government have fueled oppression against workers, stripping 240,000 workers of their wages for the past 23 months. The genocidal war's impact has also left 267,000 workers in the West Bank jobless over the same period, with workers facing harassment, arrests, and attacks with live and rubber bullets, resulting in 33 workers killed by the Israeli military and over 30,000 detained, with arrests happening daily. The Director General of the International Labour Organization's report makes it clear the intolerable situation facing Palestinian workers. Sisters and brothers, the situation in the West Bank is a genuine crisis. The West Bank has been completely cut off from occupied Jerusalem since 1967. Cities, villages, and camps face harsh collective punishment, surrounded by over 1,050 electronic iron gates and checkpoints that only open on the orders of Israeli soldiers. These measures restrict movement between cities, villages, and disrupting everyday life. Palestinians face severe limits on their freedom of movement. Traveling abroad is only possible through one land crossing, the King Hussein Bridge, also called the Allenby Bridge, fully controlled by the Israeli military. It's the only way out of the West Bank to Jordan and the rest of the world, as there is no airport or other crossing. The bridge operates limited hours from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. daily, with even shorter hours on Fridays, closing at noon, and it's completely closed on Saturdays. The West Bank is also facing systematic destruction and displacement, with camps like Jenin, Tulkarem, Balata, Al-Fari'a, and Nur Shams subjected to vandalism and destruction for no reason other than to subdue and choke the Palestinian people. The West Bank has become a massive prison for Palestinians and a playground for extremist settlers who chase us, shoot at us, throw stones at cars, cut down trees, burn farms, and kill livestock. Ask your embassy in Jerusalem about this. I stand by every word I have said. Israeli settlements in the West Bank are an existential threat, controlling 80% of the land. Restrictions in the West Bank make life harder for travelers and worsen the challenges of life. For example, to be here with you, I left Nablus on Friday morning and did not arrive until early Sunday. This control is worsened by recent racist policies such as the nation-state law and ongoing settler violence, which goes beyond vandalism to include murder. Brother General Secretary Paul and Sister Marilla have seen some of what I've just shared when they visited the West Bank. Sisters and brothers, after 58 years of this occupation, governments around the world need to act, including the British government. The British government must call for an immediate ceasefire, an end to the illegal occupation, ban trade in goods from the illegal settlements, suspend the UK-Israel trade agreement, and also end all arms licenses to Israel, and conditionally support the recognition of the State of Palestine, and also ensure accountability for those responsible for war crimes and genocide. Sisters and brothers, Palestine's acceptance as an observer state in the International Labour Organization is a historic step that gives hope to our people and workers. This milestone is the direct result of global workers' unity and their steadfast support, which secured this vote for our rights. We deeply value this decision and see it as a key achievement to build on as we work toward full membership in the organization. Brother General Secretary, you were clear when you spoke at the 7th Conference of the Palestine General Federation of Trade Unions, speaking to Palestinian workers and national leadership. You called for an immediate ceasefire, the humanitarian distribution of aid, condemned the Israeli occupation as illegal, affirmed workers' rights to dignified work, and supported an independent Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. You emphasized that this is not just Palestine's cause, but a matter of global solidarity and human rights. Your passionate words were well received by every Palestinian who heard you at the conference, carrying the true spirit of British workers' solidarity with our people, not as a fleeting gesture, but as a sincere, powerful stance. I offer my gratitude especially to the General Secretary, the General Council President, and the TUC office for your role in supporting Palestinian workers. We look forward to collaborating and forging an agreement between the TUC and the PGFTU. We also thank you for the TUC aid project you have supported in the West Bank. Thank you, workers of the United Kingdom. We reaffirm today that social justice and decent work are impossible under these conditions. Yet, despite all the challenges, we will remain steadfast on our land.
No matter how harsh the illegal Israeli occupation, our spirit won't be broken by starvation, displacement, or genocide. We will stand firm together. Let's build an independent Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. The occupation will end. Palestine will endure. Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine! Thank you.
We go now to the National Secretary of the Unione Sindacale di Base, that's the Italian rank and file unions, Guido Lutrario, as he delivers a speech from the public assembly that was convened on the 11th of September 2025 that preceded this week's incredible scenes in Italy. Let's start this anticipated assembly by saying, why are we here? We are here because we have to organise, all together if possible, the defence of the global Sumud Flotilla. The demonstration that we have to do en masse to safeguard our brothers and sisters, open a passage through the siege of Gaza so that the aid can get to the Palestinian population, intervene in the moment that the situation could become one in which the flotilla could be stopped and the operation jeopardized. In these last few days, in particular here in Genova, an appeal was launched, an appeal to block everything in the case that the situation degenerates. This appeal went around the world. It was translated in I don't know how many languages, and it was relaunched in many places, and many shared, truthfully, that this appeal speaks about Palestine, but it also speaks about us, and of a desire for liberation that is traversing town squares throughout Italy. Let's not waste this signal, but let us translate it into a concrete action, because this is the signal. This proposal is also closely tied to the role of workers that have returned to being able to carry out a role as protagonists in this country. It wasn't foreseen, and we had almost forgotten this. The workers, not alone, however, can carry out a decisive function, because when we say block everything, first and foremost, we have to stop business as usual. So at the proposal of the workers and port workers of Genova, we have summed up the willingness to proclaim a general strike. This is the indication, and we said, if the flotilla is attacked, we will convene the general strike and we will block everything. And we found ourselves, these last few days, in front of two attacks on the flotilla, and so we are faced with the decision whether to launch this signal or not. We are not in a country where general strikes are commonplace. We are in a country where there is a big attitude of defeatism and resignation. So the cards we have, we must play cautiously and with great care. However, we have still decided to convene a general strike on a precise date. This date is for the moment the 22nd of September. In the statement on the 22nd of September, there is the general strike. In the statement, there is written something important. If the situation precipitates sooner, the strike will occur sooner, because we will not be able to wait for that date. And this obviously already places us on a complicated road, because whilst the 22nd of September is a date that consents all the workers of this country to go on strike and remain within the damned rules that unfortunately exist in this country now for many years on strike actions, if we decide to carry out this strike sooner because the situation will force us to proclaim it sooner, we, in a lot of sectors, will be outside of the rules, or better said, we will be following the rules of humanity that aren't the ones of the damn laws of this country. But understand this well, that this will not be an easy match. If instead, on the 22nd of September, we will be in the situation of this type, as in the flotilla continues in its operation, we will have to follow through with the general strike, and we will have to carry out blockades. We have to stop the country, and we will do it. We will have to do it by blocking ports. We will have to do it by blocking train stations in those cities where there are no ports, meaning doing all those mass actions that consent the interruption foremost of the trading of goods and the circulation of money to paralyze the country, placing the government in the condition of having to decide whether they want to be on the side of a country that is mobilizing to defend its dignity as well as the interests and lives of the Palestinian population, or to be against it. This will be a match that we will play. This will, however, be a day that will be important, but also normal. If it won't happen on the 22nd of September, a precipitation worse than that which we have seen these days, i.e. the heavy strikes we have seen, that however have not stopped the flotilla, in the ensuing days, as the flotilla will arrive closer, like we all hope, to the territories of Gaza, the tension will obviously rise, and if we were to find ourselves in front of an intervening event that interrupts the route, we will have to again mobilize. So, as it stands for the moment, this is our program. What does it mean to mobilize when the time comes to do so? We are here to discuss this, and we ask that all the comments are focused on this argument. We propose to block all relevant ports of this country And so the port of Genova, the port of Livorno, the port of Trieste, the port of Civitavecchia, and because news arrives of comrades that want to close ports on the Adriatic, Ravenna, Ancona, Bari, everything that we can, and we appeal to every union organization of this country. First, to concentrate all the industrial actions already programmed on the 22nd of September, because unfortunately there are industrial actions that impact the realization of the strike and so force some categories of workers to exclude themselves. If in the meantime there was this signal that all the union organizations cancel to reallocate with the strike on the 22nd of September, this would be an important signal, and let us hope that this happens. And also to build up industrial action in workplaces, starting with the ports. Ports have to be closed across the crossings. We have to close the harbour crossings. We have to build a human wall that interrupts the activities of ports. Where there are no ports, we have to stop railway activities. We have to stop the stations. If thousands, like the ones that have been demonstrating in these last few days, concentrate in the central stations, railway activities will be paralysed. And so the invite is, in every city, to meet up, to organise, to aim to realise altogether this communal action. Then we can do many other things in the small centres. We can occupy bridges. We can occupy highways. We can do many other things. And here, the popular imagination of this population isn't lacking. Ports and train stations must represent our central targets. This is the proposal that we are offering to you for the 22nd of September, or if the date were to change, on the date in which it will happen. These are the fundamental things we wanted to tell you as Unione Sindacale di Base. There are other proposals related to the ports that other comrades here from other countries will speak of. Luckily, we are not alone. There are other realities that are following this situation. We are working together. I think so far we have worked well together. It is a complicated match. But I believe that we all have a bit more enthusiasm than we had in the last few months. So let's utilize it, because it is a fundamental weapon in confronting this situation. Thank you. That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au or at your favourite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03 9419 8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Tobia. Remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.